Greetings, everyone. It's another week of the podcast. I had the infinite pleasure of interviewing Laird Thompson this week, and when he opened up his Zoom window, I was astonished and delighted to glimpse a little bit of the island of Bali in the background. You'll hear a little bit of birdsong as well as some of the gorgeous ocean breezes that were happening during the time of the recording. I was so envious because he's spending time there writing a novel that's a little bit semi-autobiographical, but is going to have some sci-fi twists. My guest this week is also a practicing alchemist, and he guides and works with people to help them create lives that they love. In this episode, we talk big magic in the form of trickster, in the form of the hero's journey, but also what happens when you follow that little inner voice that prompts you and guides you to a better life. So now, without further ado, episode 148 of Bite-Sized Blessings.
The day before I come here, I get in a pretty awful moped accident and have road rash basically down the left side of my body, 6 stitches up my arm. And there are things I can say about that and how it was my fault and no one else was involved, and I'm fortunate to be alive, and small miracle of small miracles, my hands were completely unscathed, and I am here to write a book.
Well, I'm excited to talk to you, and my first question always is, and it's proved to be a stumper for some people, but who are you as a human being? You know, if you were to go to a party or a conference and have to introduce yourself to either, you know, one person or a group of people, like, how do you self-describe? Who are you?
Yeah. I mean, that is, it's such a expansive question or open to specific interpretation question. And it is challenging for me to answer that because I am so many things. I have so many passions and so many different talents that have created many different phases in my life that were focused on different purposes. And I just said to my friend Haven a couple of nights ago, I said, I'm an annoyingly purpose-driven person. And we were talking about traveling together, actually. And what I was recognizing about myself is, like, in many regards, I don't go places to just simply enjoy myself. I go places for meaningful reasons. I'm a dancer. I was a professional dancer for many years, over a decade, studying and performing for like 2 decades professionally, really like contemporary, mostly improvisational work, but verged from cabaret to performance art. I've been exhibit in museums before. I'm a writer, but the book that I'm currently writing here in Bali, started in Bali, is the first book I've written, though I've published some articles. I've studied ceremonial practice. I consider myself a bit of a priestess within my community. I've stewarded a sanctuary for radical and magical queer beings. I'm a gardener. I grow food. That's a huge passion of mine. I'm a lover, like love of nature, the world, other people's stories, spirit, my ancestors. All of these are really strong influences in how I choose to live my life guided by my intuition.
I'm ever so curious, like, what do you think you, what did you imagine for yourself when you were a kid? Like, did you have a dream for what you were going to do?
Growing up, what did I want to become? Well, I always have known I was magical and that I engaged the world through my relationship to magic. I was a teen witch, so that more explicit, methodical relationship to magic. I was kind of a lazy teen witch. I was not like really studied and like, you know, keeping a book of shadows and, you know, doing spell work all the time. And in certain levels, that's not really my magic either. Doing willful spell work in the world is not my magic. Growing food, growing up queer, growing up with the recognition of being magical. From a pretty early age, my clownish trickster qualities were coming out. And also I think as I was beginning to come into puberty and so discover an emergent sexuality, which, you know, again, was a confusing time, I also just started to discover a certain amount of dance spirit wanting to come through me. And so in high school, I was very fortunate to actually go to a high school that had a dance program. And so from a pretty young age, dancing and the expression of myself through movement was blossoming for me. There was a time in my life when I wanted to be a robotics engineer. Like when I was like in grade school. So there's a time when I wanted to be a marine biologist. And I went on to study dance and environmental sciences in undergraduate work.
I have to say, I have a really soft spot for the trickster, like clown out in the world. I know some people do not like clowns and they're terrifying. And trickster can be terrifying too, because you never know if, I mean, well, maybe most of the time you're getting the short end of the stick with trickster, but to be like a really powerful holder of that energy and just be in the world kind of, you know, being playful and generative and creative and whimsical, enchanting, because kind of when you're a trickster, you're weaving lots of different threads at once to kind of keep the story going, to keep the everything moving along. So I have a really, really soft spot in my heart for trickster. I think trickster, you know, out of all the gods, right? Loki, whatever, you think about all the gods and all the different religions, trickster is always, I think, the most potent. Would you agree?
Trickster makes this world. Do you know about that book by Lewis Hyde? I actually have not read all of it. I've read little bits and it always calls me back, and so I need to read it. But trickster makes this world. There's always the need for someone who defies the perceived divine authority to shift reality for whomever is a part of the pantheon storyline, so that new possibility can emerge. And I mean, you talk about trickster being scary, and because the ego does not like its tricks to be revealed. The ego finds power in how it leads others to believe that this is how the world is, and that's how the ego retains its power over us in our lives. And trickster is about, you know, pulling the mask off of not just themselves, but everybody else too. And that's scary.
It is scary. I love that book. The other great book that Lewis Hyde wrote was The Gift. Did you read that? Ugh, it's so good. It's really a great book. But Trickster Makes This World is, Trickster like shakes things up, you know, pulls the rug out from under you. And, you know, the powers that be, the ones who are in charge, hate Trickster, hate, and will do anything they can to have Trickster not exist or make sure that energy is muted or even disappears. And, you know, I think that's why I really love people who are who are outliers, you know, who are doing things that are really avant-garde or doing things in a messy way. I love messiness. And, you know, I like to be a little sloppy sometimes. I mean, quite like 85% of the time I love being sloppy. And I think that's where that in that messiness and that there's like some excitement because the rules are kind of gone or they're broken or they're put to the side. And in that way, you can kind of reshape the world. Hopefully, if you have a lot of friends, you can reshape the world in a way that's really quite beautiful. So I have to say, I all this to pay homage to your Trickster self. I hope I wasn't too like twee about it. Twee.
What does twee mean? I don't know what that word means.
Oh, it's I don't know, overly saccharine, sugary.
No, you're fine.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, just, I mean, you kind of alluded to this before a little bit, but did you grow up in a religious household or what did that look like for you?
Maybe Easter service. Like, talking about, no. I'm just going to say, like, not really at all. Like, my grandmother would have loved us to have been more Methodist than I think we were. And yeah, no. And so being left without any orientation in that regard, in its own way, was a gift for me because I had to figure out myself in relationship to that. And I turned to nature and magic as a result of that. But in short, yeah, I went to church probably like 10 times in my life.
I'm so curious. Your grandmother sounds like a devout Methodist. I wonder what she would think about the schism that's actually happening in the Anglican community right now. And what she would have to say about it. I'm just, you know, I love talking to older religious people because things are, you know, kind of being shooked. Things are shaking up in the Anglican communion and the Methodist church is fracturing, unfortunately, but it's, I like to hear people's stories about that because everyone has a different relationship to their religion. I would love to hear, you know, what you talked about, you know, having, I mean, I don't know what your religious practice is right now, but I do think I just saw this documentary recently where this woman who is a psychotherapist, but also a scientist, did this hour-long documentary about how it's been proven that 20% of the population is highly sensitive. And whether that's sensitive towards beauty or art or music or a sunset or to other people or to animals or to nature, it sounds like you're absolutely one of those people. Nature, I think, but also beauty as well, because I know we haven't talked about it, but I really sense that you have an appreciation. I mean, you were a dancer for so long. I think to be in a vocation like that, something that's that creative, you really have to have an ability to kind of inhabit beauty or bring beauty forth into the world. But also you talk about magic and nature. And I think, you know, as children, we're of course shaped and told to be this or not be that or whatever. But I think some of us are captivated when we're very young by what's beautiful out in the world. And it sounds like that thread has kind of woven its way through your life. And I think beauty and magic are kind of intertwined. I know I put a lot into that, but would you agree with that? Would you agree that you might be one of that those 20% of human beings who are more sensitive and have the capacity to sense beauty more readily?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's been periods of my time where I referred to myself as a sensitive. That was actually like a term of endearment for myself and others. And yeah, walking in beauty and the connection with magic. I don't have a strong relationship to Diné culture, Navajo culture, to use the Spanish word for the people. But there's a whole prayer walking in beauty, beauty before, beauty behind, beauty to the side, beauty on all sides. And I don't want to appropriate that in any way in terms of my life view, but there is a being guided by beauty and being guided by magic. And you asked about religion. I definitely don't practice religion, but there are different practices that I have engaged in my life, one of which is alchemy. And that's my most current practice that I engage most readily. And really, in short, being guided by one's intuition to live one's life is living a magical life. And so from my perspective, beauty is how I can orient towards the earth, my relationship to spirit, my relationship to my ancestors, my relationship to other beings that I know play roles in our very fortunate lives being incarnated as humans on this very sacred planet.
I don't know if you want to talk about it, but I would love to hear more about the book you're currently writing. I'm also a writer. I love to write. I'm actually helping some friends edit their various books. Just because I really, for some reason, love reading what other people write, but I liked hearing about other people's writing. Is this a book that you've been thinking about for a while? Is it fiction? Is it nonfiction? What was the inspiration, I guess?
That's a great question. I try to not think about it as much as possible because ultimately I write from a place of intuition. It's a semi-autobiographical, transformative nonfiction, but fiction also. I laugh because it just sounds so ridiculous, but there's aspects of my life that I draw from, some of which are accurate and true representations of things that have happened to me. And then there are aspects of my life that are just points of departure. And then it becomes total fiction with like a sci-fi twist. So yeah, it became true for my spirit to write this book. And the best way I can describe it is I'm making a puzzle one piece at a time, not seeing the whole picture of the puzzle that I'm making. And so it's really a process of something unfolding and emerging out of me such that I'm the aperture through which the book is arriving.
I like that. I think that's the first time on this podcast that someone has used the word aperture, and I welcome it. I welcome that, the use of that word. Thank you. Thank you. I have to say that I love, I really appreciate alchemy. I, am definitely a novice around it, but the image, and this is probably the most basic image in my mind's eye of alchemy is, turning lead into gold, right? And that is just the story of, right, the hero's journey, what we're supposed to do every day when we get out of bed, what we can do with our voices every day with, you know, turn someone's day around by just by complimenting their clothing or whatever. And it's like there's almost this idea that every moment can be an alchemical moment of there's a potentiality in every, I don't know, second, nanosecond to spin lead into gold. And I think that also is the realm of Trickster. I think Trickster is the most efficient and catalytic creator of spinning lead into gold. And so there we go. No wonder you love alchemy, being a little trickster yourself. I kind of love that. But it's such a potent image. You know, of course, we all have this image of all the scientists from 400 to 500 years ago working in their labs and or whatever they were at that point, and probably poisoning themselves half the time in the process. For this, you know, trying to create this gold nugget, they were so sure that literally they could create gold and they would be rich forever. When I think the more beautiful and energetic idea is just of having access to that ability every single second, that is way more beautiful to me, because there's so much potential inside that. There's so much possibility. And if you're someone who likes to imagine or inhabit a creative space, man, you gotta create gold from lead all the time. I just went on a rant. I hope that was okay.
Oh, it's great. It's rich, full of gold. Yeah. The first thing I can say is the power of the imagination not being the stuff of make-believe, but being quite real and potent as a progenerative force in the world. Trickster can't remake the world if Trickster can't imagine what to remake it into. And I observe is a certain amount of both and in the representation of alchemy that you bring forward. I imagine that there are those people who fundamentally believe that elemental material lead can be periodically transformed into the element of gold. And in the school of alchemy that I come from, that on some level was a smokescreen for alchemists, sorcerers, witches to protect themselves from the Inquisition, the burning times, when anyone who said they could create anything, especially like turn something into something else or create something out of nothing, that was heretical and that was punishable by death because of the church and the church's dominion over truth. And so on one level, I see those old dudes in laboratories with beakers as a lot of props and smokescreen for there to be a kind of like, look, we're just over here turning lead into gold. There's nothing wrong happening here. We're not actually creators. Because for anyone to step into the role or the energy of imagining the world to be different than it, quote, is, they're stepping into the realm of creation, and there can only be one creator in the dogmatic hierarchy of, you know, that power over structure that has existed within so many institutional religions over the aeons. And both and turning lead into gold is very, very real from the perspective of taking the toxic base metal of our ego, which as shadow or the dragon that needs to be confronted because it's protecting the gold from the hero, to take the led of our egoic upbringing, which we all carry. We all have an ego. We all formed identifying beliefs that were self-limiting about ourselves because of a variety of factors, but most prominently, like imperfect parenting, which who hasn't had some of that? You know, some people not even have parents, so they, you know, ascribe parenting to different forces in their societal world. The ego creates this system of orienting for the sake of our safety. Our ego is needed, but it's also needful. And until we can put those needs in a place such that we can then use the power of our imagination to create what we love in the world, the ego is just gonna be in this survival mode such that we can't really move from survival to thrival. And alchemy is the wisdom to do as you say every single day. Recognize that when you wake up, your ego is going to be running. When conflict arises, you're going to find these different strategies. All of us, not you, me, everyone, is going to find these different strategies for how to resolve that tension, because no one wants tension. Tension's bad. Can't have tension. And got to slay that dragon. So alchemy is about figuring out how to harness that potential energy and redirect it into the gold that we want to create in the world. And so therefore, the ego becomes an ally. What's her name? She's a Tibetan Rinpoche. She wrote a book called Feed Your Demons. And on some level, it's about by getting to know our demons rather than trying to shove them back into Pandora's box or shackle them to the bed where they only come for us in our dreams because we've put them in their place. I mean, that's a little bit more appropriate as a metaphor, is like how to put ego in its place. And okay, so talk about rants. I just went on a big rant, but I think it answers your question and kind of weaves together a variety of the things that we've been talking about, because it is a daily practice and it isn't like the achievement of turning lead into gold and now you get to sit on the throne and just relate to the world with the riches that you've created. It's really a process of being in methodical relationship with one's ego and one's heart.
I have a couple things I'd love to just say is I really love the image. Did you ever see the movie Spirited Away?
Oh, my little nieces, every year for Christmas, I give them a new Miyazaki film. And on one level, it's because Miyazaki is so amazing about centering women and little girls as like the feminist principles of his hero journey narratives. And and also my two little nieces are part Asian. And so it's like, it's just such good role modeling for children, Miyazaki's work. Yeah, so to answer your question, I love Spirited Away.
Yes. Well, I mean, I think that film is just, it's super enchanting. What I really appreciated about it was it kind of gave me a whole new kind of imagery for hungry ghosts, which I often, you know, sometimes I interact with someone in the world who I don't know, or, you know, whatever that interaction is, usually, I mean, sometimes it's negative. And I just think to myself, you know, gosh, I wonder which hungry ghost is feeding on you, because, you know, I'm sure that you don't want to act like this out in the world, or you don't want like this. There's something else happening here that has nothing to do with me. And something's like feeding on you. And so, and that movie Spirited Away, when all the spirits, you know, they're running the bathhouse, they're getting off that boat for their spa day, little spirit spa day. It just was really evocative for me in that.
Totally. Movie.
Super helpful. So I really loved it. I also really appreciated, you know, we were talking about the hero's journey, and the one thing that is just so powerful for me about the hero's journey, so powerful. And that, you know, I learned years ago, but it was like the final thing I learned about the hero's journey. And I was like, what? And it blew my mind, was you go through the hero's journey. The hero goes on this, you know, trials, tribulations, and then triumph. But the one thing, the last act that has to happen every single time is the hero has to bring their story to the community, or their gift, the gift, the boon yeah. that was won, they have to bring to the community. And for me, you know, that can be anything. But I thought, what an incredible, incredibly beautiful way of sharing the riches, whether it's learning, intelligence, actual riches, a treasure, you know, a story, anything that you, any boon that can be won on that hero's journey, it is mandatory that you share with the community. And for me, that's the most powerful part of the hero's journey, because you're encouraging belonging, you're encouraging relationship, you're encouraging people coming together and forming community. And then you're also sharing, your gifts. And I don't know if you feel that with, and it reminded me of the whole turning lead into gold, you know, and that whole metaphor for the hero's journey as well, is, you know, we're supposed to share that gold, whatever kind of gold it is, with our community, in the hopes that, you know, it builds resilience and relationship. Rant ended.
If everyone is a hero and everyone can face the dragon, the shadow, their ego, and find the treasure that they've been seeking, which ultimately is the gift that each of us have to bring out of the cave of our heart. I mean, that's it. Like, a gift is not a gift if it's not given or shared. And so once the treasure or the gold or the gift is found and claimed, brought out of oneself, then it's only a meaningful force for change in the world if it's brought forward, shared, given.
You and I have talked a little bit about this, but anything you'd like to share that you thought was magical or miraculous?
There's so much, because it happens to me all the time. I mean, I live my life guided by my intuition, and therefore magic is how I relate to the world. And because I engage the world from a place of magic, and my focus creates that reality that is magical, there's a Dar Williams song, The Christians and the Pagans, that is fun. She in the song says something, you find magic in your God while we find magic everywhere. And we could talk more about that, but I guess like a recent story I could share is like where I am right now. I'm writing a book. One of the characters in my book is the ocean. I grew up partially along a stretch of North Pacific coastline that is not dissimilar from even the sand that is here. When I got to Bali, I knew I was coming here to work, to go to a workshop on writing from a place of intuition. After that, I knew I wanted to stay in Bali and write a book, and I had no plans about where that would happen. Three different people in two, but like different contexts, two of whom hadn't spoken to one another, mentioned this place. One was a local Balinese person, two were other alchemists who were at this gathering. This is a relatively unknown spot, and In fact, one of the alchemists was like, oh yeah, and there's this perfect place where I could totally imagine you just like writing. And in fact, when I saw it, I was like, someone should write a book there. And you're telling me that you want to go to a place near the ocean and write a book. And I just saw you there. And I traveled to this area, was not able to figure out how to book this place. Met another magical creature on the beach when I was like looking up at this place, which is basically a bungalow out on this peninsula, with the coastline stretching out down to the south. Long story short, I had booked this place after searching it out. And actually, cautionary tale, if I'd followed my intuition more deftly and quickly, I would be staying in that other bungalow that's further out, and there was resistance and I didn't follow up quick enough and the booking shifted, but good thing there's two, I'm in the other one. And the day before I come here, I get in a pretty awful moped accident and have road rash, basically down the left side of my body, 6 stitches up my arm. And there are things I can say about that and how it was my fault and no one else was involved. And I'm fortunate to be alive. And small miracle of small miracles, my hands were completely unscathed. And I am here to write a book. And so the accident, in a way, necessitated that A, I really give myself the gift of this, what turns out to be a honeymoon suite. And part of the egoic work that I'm doing in my life is really to step into unconditional love of self, because that's part of my shit. Is not really fully loving myself. And that's a whole nother conversation. But I had gone on this journey, found this place by following the breadcrumbs that other people had left for me, booked it, had this accident the day I was to be moving into the new place, was still able to even ride a moped after the accident happened, and my hands were completely unscathed. So I created the perfect place to have a recovery and to write a book, overlooking a stretch of coastline that reminds me of where I grew up, to write a somewhat autobiographical book that has the ocean as part of the narrative structure, or even is a dynamic character in the book. And part of my alchemical work is to learn how to love myself. And I ended up intuiting to book myself a honeymoon suite. So that's like my most recent kind of magical miracle mystery tour.
Love that you booked the honeymoon suite. Come on. Especially since that's, you know, this, I mean, that is a whole other massive, huge conversation, is the alchemical process around that. Probably pretty much every single person on this planet needs to do, not everyone, but almost everyone, learning to love the self. And that's some heavy lifting right there. That is some heavy lifting.
And it's everyone's work to do. And I would say, if there is one thing that is everyone's work to do, loving oneself is that work. 'Cause it's like RuPaul says, like, if you can't love yourself, how the hell are you going to love somebody else? And until we really love ourselves, we can't bring the transformative force of love to the world. And who in this world doesn't think that it needs more love.
Well, I mean, I just got the image of Rumpelstiltskin, you know, and in the story where are any of those stories, those Brothers Grimm stories where, you know, there's this poor person who wants this, that has these aspirations, and, you know, a crone or a trickster or Rumpelstiltskin comes along and says, hey, yeah, I'll totally give you that, but you have to spin that mile high mountain of straw into gold by dawn tomorrow. And, you know, there is always that passage of the, you know, the person's like, oh my gosh, how am I going to do this? You know, this is impossible. Like, the tasks are always insurmountable. They're always slightly absurd. But I love what I love. And because it encourages in me to think that this world is cooperative and there are beings and spirits out there that want to co-create with me and work with me. What I love about all these stories is that these allies always show up and they're like, hey, you know, like the mice with the straw, they're like, we'll totally spin all this straw into gold by morning. You take a nap and we're totally on top of it. We're on it. In every single story, there are these amazing, really non-human allies that show up. And they do the work for the person that is struggling and thinks that the task is insurmountable. So for me, it really helps me to remember that I'm not alone in this, you know, that out in the world, you know, whether it's friends or family or elementals or spirits or whatever is out there, it wants all of us to succeed or have a good life or find the gold or achieve what we need to achieve. And that's what your story reminds me of. You know, you, but also I think it goes to also your story reminds me of how powerful trickster is. And if you're a trickster in the world, you can shape the world to what you will. And that's, you got the honeymoon suite. I mean, need we say more? I hope there was giant bottle of champagne in there, like welcoming you and saying, hey, drink me.
No, but I can't show you the picture of the like topless woman that is over the bed. And then there's also these, you know, two towels have been made into swans with plumeria and hibiscus flowers picked from, you know, around the bungalow, you know, scenting the towels in the room before you get there. But there's, you know, there's even allegory in what you just were sharing about trickster stories. And, you know, there's the like negative, dark, mischievous, and some would say evil trickster. And then there are the tricksters who really are offering a gift through a more explicit and obvious trial of some sort. And, you know, I think that part of the various smoke screens that different mythos or allegories have had over the years are mystifying processes that actually can be demystified, because what you're saying about the co-conspiratorial nature of nature and the divine and our relationship to superconscious source, how we know things across the dimensions of space and time in non-linear ways, the ability to transform the lead into gold or the straw into gold really is as simple as switchcrafting one's relationship to the story that the ego is holding on to, switchcrafting our perceptions about the way the world is, and really using our imaginations to connect to source so that we can create our own pathway towards the the gifts that ultimately await for us, not outside of ourselves, but within us. I think it's important to demystify what historically has been mystified for very good reasons. And now, I mean, the world needs as much magic, good magic, that is like innocently bringing forth highest good for the sake of love and transformation. The world needs that now more than ever.
Okay, so this is why I love you, okay? You just used the word switchcrafting, which I think has also never been said on this podcast or in my world ever until this moment. And so I'm so excited that I know a new word now, and it's super fun. And I'm thinking of like everything that I want to put it on, like t-shirts and cups and everything, mugs, you name it. But the third word that you use that I just love, and I thought, oh my God, this world would be a better place, is co-conspirator, which I think is one word, but it could be two. But I love the words co-conspirator, whether it's with nature or friends. And I feel like if we find enough co-conspirators to have fun with and play with and be tricky with and make, you know, help our co-conspirators to love themselves, I think this world would be a way more exciting and fun place. Thoughts?
Co-conspirator has spirit at the center of it.
Drops the mic and walks away. Oh my God, I could totally talk to you for like 10,000 years.
Good, because I might live that long.
Yes. Okay. Everyone, I hope you loved this interview, and I hope you loved the miracle and yet another reminder of the magic that you can usher into your life, that you can invite into your life if you just listen to your heart. I'm going to tell you that intuition, it is a powerful thing. And I think that if we all listened to our intuitions a little more closely, we'd all be living these amazing and enchanting lives. I'd like to remind everyone this week, please do consider leaving a rating or writing a review. I say this so much, but those ratings and reviews, they are oh so important and help other people find the podcast. I also need to thank my guest this week, Laird, for sharing all of his stories, but also giving someone that he absolutely did not know his trust and his confidence. I had another very dear friend introduce him to me, and for that friend, I am so very grateful. If you want to know a little bit more about my esteemed guest, please read the show notes. There's a wonderful little blurb in there about Laird and what he's trying to do in this world. And I need to thank the creators of the music used in this episode: Tim Kulig, Taiga Sound Productions, Winnie the Moog, and Frank Schroeder. For complete attribution, please see under the episode show notes. Thank you for listening, and here's my one request. Be like Laird. Listen to that still small voice that has guidance for you. Or if three different people on an island in the middle of paradise come up to you and suggest the same thing, listen to them. There are so many different ways the universe and that really potent energy has of getting you to listen to living a more enchanting and delicious life. So look for the clues, listen to strangers, and listen to your heart. And I think that pretty soon, you'll be living a life that you could only imagine.